Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Hunting Seasons, the podcast that dares to binge watch, deep dive, and break down a season of television each and every episode. I'm Broderick Gordis.
I'm Damask Leary.
And today we'll be discussing Andor Season 1. Damask Leary, you are in my house.
I am.
What are you doing here? How'd you get in?
Well, I'm currently sitting in my Minecraft pajamas that I got from the Target children's section.
Yep.
I've just woken up. I've got a long black in front of me. You and I went and saw, went and saw Avatar 2 at IMAX last night because our dear friend of the pod and friend in real life, Paul, made us. And I
Paul
want that.
Mitzi.
I want that to be clear. He made me go. Well, no one made me go, but I had nothing else to do.
So a ticket was bought for you. Yep. You were held at ransom as part of our movie club.
Yep. Snuck in some G&T to IMAX. It was the only way I could get through it. And yeah, it happened.
It happened.
It did happen.
What's your early review?
Early
morning and
It is precisely what you would expect from what we know of the first Avatar film. I was never a fan of that at all.
Rewatched it 2 days ago just to double check.
Just to really hurt ourselves. Yeah. It's very, very long. Mm. It has no substance. And I think the values within the film feel so incredibly dated in terms of family and things like that, which I didn't really like. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the feelings coming out of it was the first hour just dragged.
Mm-hmm.
The middle hour was really pretty, but dragged. And the last hour, which is a lot of action, was really fun, but dragged. And it's like, everything about this film, like it's a spectacle, definitely. Seeing it IMAX 3D was the way to watch it. The technology is ridiculous at this point. Like it is just, it's a level of its own now. But fucking hell, it could have been an hour shorter easily and just been more effective, I think.
Just had like a good story.
That would have helped too. Yeah. But just it didn't need, the story that was there didn't need 3 hours to tell us.
Certainly didn't. If each of your acts is 1 hour,
yeah,
it's too long.
Yeah.
It's too long.
It took... Spoilers for the Avatar Way of Water. They get to see water versions of the Na'vi. But it takes them an hour to get to that point. It should have been like 20 minutes into the movie is when we got to that point. Anyway, we do have some news we need to discuss before we get to our Andor review. Big news, in fact, for listeners of the podcast. Hunting Seasons is closing imminently. That is to say, the podcast is going to be coming to an end in the next month or so, basically.
That
we've made the decision after 6 years that it's time to move on from the podcast, try new things. It's been a lot of fun, but we have been doing this 6 years now. When we started making Hunting Seasons with the ambition of trying to catch up on all the television we missed, like The Sopranos and Breaking Bad and stuff like this.
They're the only two that we watched on that list.
That basically were. The Wire, we did The Wire as well.
That's true, yeah.
The Wire. It was a lot easier. Damask and I were at very different places in our lives. Mm-hmm. We were living in the same house.
We were.
Our work schedule wasn't so crazy.
No.
Relationship-wise, things were different. And we were, even not just living in the same house, living in the same state at least.
Mm.
It's a little bit different with the three-hour time delay. So it's become increasingly more difficult to do. So it's just become an increasing burden on the time we have to, like, do spare things, like...
Yeah. I mean, it's the first time in my life when I've had like a proper full-time job. and I cannot balance the two. Certainly not in the context that like the podcast is in at the moment, which is like watching a season of television.
Exactly.
Quite often a season of television that I can't really be bothered watching because I don't really want to watch it.
Yeah.
So, it's just become a bit of a burden at this stage. And that's not really what I want it to be.
It's become a job. And that's like... Yeah, I mean, it was always going to be that, but it was a lot easier back in the day. And we still love the podcast. The decision has not come easily, and we love having the opportunity to hang out and talk about TV and stuff like that. So we're going to find a different avenue for that, which we'll talk about a different date. But it's not going to be the podcast hunting season as we know it. It may not be a podcast at all. We'll figure out what that looks like. But I was I like video games as well, and there was these things that come out at the end of the year where, like, PlayStation, Nintendo send you, like, your stats on how much, like, video gaming you've done that year.
Yeah.
And I bought a PlayStation 5 when it came out, like, $700, $800 machine. And it had, for this year, I'd played 22 hours of video games, which is not a very good return investment.
No, it's not. You can give it to me if you want.
I would like to be playing video games again. So, like, getting some time back to that would be good. Mm-hmm. Also, another announcement that's going a little bit public, a little bit earlier than maybe I expected, but let's do it anyway. We're expecting a baby in June, Steph and I.
I'm about to say, you better clarify.
Not you and I.
Yeah, it's you and your lovely fiancé, Stephanie.
Yeah, so that is also going to eat into my time and ability to watch television and review it.
Bloody babies, really getting in
the way. So it just seems like the right time. And so the basic way this is going to go down, today is our 198th proper review, season review of a television show, not including mini episodes or off-topic hot topics. We're going to do today's episode. We're going to do next week's episode, then one more review. Or next episode, yep. And then we'll do a final wrap-up episode, which will be us discussing the podcast in general, what the last 6 years have been like, and sort of leave it on that note there. So if you have any questions about what's going on, send them our way. If you have any comments, any thoughts you'd like to share, any last-minute requests for what we should review, though those have been decided already, so good luck with that. Send them our way, and we're happy to respond to that, and we're looking forward to hearing from people. And sorry, like, we're going to miss the show. Everyone we've told at this point that we're going to they're going to be ending has had, like, an element of shock in their reaction and sadness, which I take as a compliment that people are going to miss
us. I think it's yeah, the fact that we've done it for 6 years.
I'm impressed by that too.
Pretty impressive.
I
agree.
200 review episodes, I'm very impressed by. Like, I really, we started talking about this even earlier in the year, back in April when I went to visit you in WA. We sort of talked about what's the future of the podcast look like. And I was like, 200 episodes is a good round number. If we can make it to that, I think it'd be a good place to, like, put a cap on it and move on to do different things. Anyway, with all that now out there for the listeners to hear, let's get to our spoiler free review of Andor season one.
Let me clue you in.
Season in review.
Andor, also known as Star Wars Andor, is an American science fiction action-adventure television series created by Tony Gilroy, best known as writer of the Bourne Identity films, for the streaming service Disney Plus, and is the fourth live-action series in the Star Wars franchise, while also being a prequel to the spin-off film Rogue One. The series follows thief-turned-rebel spy Cassian Andor, who first featured in Rogue One during the 5 years that leads to the events of said film. Diego Luna reprises his role as Cassian Andor, alongside an ensemble cast including Kyle Soller, Adria Arjona, Fiona Shaw, Stellan Skarsgård, Denise Goh, Genevieve O'Reilly, Faye Marseille, Verada Sethu, and Elizabeth Dulau, among others. Andor Season 1 premiered on Disney Plus on September 21, 2022, and consists of 12 episodes, each coming in at around 48 minutes. It took us approximately 9 hours and 40 minutes to watch. A second season is currently being filmed, which will conclude the series and lead into the events of Rogue One. Damask Leary, before we get to our spoiler-free review of Andor Season 1, could you please remind the listeners on your thoughts on Star Wars as a franchise as a whole, but specifically your thoughts on the Star Wars TV shows that have come to Disney Plus?
It'd be a pleasure, an honor, and a privilege.
For the last time.
Oh, yay! if only I'd known the last time we did a fucking Marvel episode. My goodness. So I grew up watching Star Wars. I had a huge affection for it growing up. Loved Princess Leia. Many hours spent pretending I was, you know, pew-pewing bad guys in the backyard. And then, obviously, the prequels came out. As a young child, very much enjoyed pod racing. As I got older and those movies continued to roll out, I was like, I don't understand anything that's happening. I don't know what to attach myself to in these films. So I just kind of left them there. Then, you know, Force Awakens, etc. came out. Really enjoyed the first one. I was like, okay, cool, reset. And then just quickly was like, oh, I'm not actually invested in this universe at all anymore. Whether that's story or different interests, although I think it's probably story since I still love Star Trek and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, and then the show started to come out, and by that point I was pretty checked out of Star Wars stuff. Mandalorian, I freaking love. I really enjoy that. Is a lot of it just cuteness? Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I'm happy to admit that. It gives me great pleasure to watch. I cry. I laugh. Do we spend too much time on Tatooine? Of course we do. Always. but I did enjoy it. What is there other TV shows that I've ignored?
We've had Obi-Wan and the Book of Boba Fett.
Oh, yeah. Boba Fett was trash. Hated it. Obi-Wan was fine. Mm. Yeah, it was pretty much how I felt about it. Also, didn't like Rogue One. Didn't watch Solo. Mm-hmm. Is there another
movie? There's the animated things like Clone Wars and stuff like that.
I've tried to
watch
Clone Wars and I feel like I could get into it, but like the time jumps are just too confusing and I can't wrap my head around it. So, yeah.
It's interesting. Not super important timing, but it's interesting that The Mandalorian came out and the last episode, I think it was the last or the second last episode, happened right before The Rise of Skywalker came out. Mm-hmm. It was like, I think that day we were able to watch the episode before the midnight screen, because there was something in that that kind of tied into something that happened in Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, right.
So, like, we were hyped on The Mandalorian at that point, mm-hmm. like, really at the height of The Mandalorian's power, and then we went and saw The Rise of Skywalker, like, what the fuck? similar. Love the original trilogy. Do not have much time for the prequel trilogy, though as a kid, particularly Phantom Menace, I did enjoy the pod racing. The Duel of the
Double
Fates.
Lightsaber and stuff. Yeah. You're like, yeah, fantastic.
There's cool stuff in there. Yeah. Just this, if you examine it with any sort of
adult mind,
it's a dumb movie. In fact, all three of them are. I think they're pretty worthless, those ones. And then I like The Force Awakens a lot. Liked it a lot. Saw it 5 times at the cinemas, I think.
Mm.
I really like The Last Jedi, though. It had to grow on me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's my favorite Star Wars film since the original trilogy.
Yeah.
The Rise of Skywalker is a heaping pile of shit, and it's ruined that entire prequel trilogy because of it. It's so disappointing. Mm. Mandalorian. Yeah, Mandalorian Season 1 is great. Loved it. Mandalorian Season 2 is very, very good. Though, if you go back and listen to that review episode, I have some strong thoughts on how that ended.
He
probably
yelled at me for 3 hours about it.
About how that series ended, the season ended. Mm-hmm. Book of Boba Fett was shit, except for the 2 Mandalorian episodes. They stuck in the middle of it, mm-hmm. Which were great. And
I think there was one of those, the direction I hated. It was Robert Rodriguez's episode.
Oh, no,
directed.
That was the book of... That was, sorry, the
oh, that
Boba
was Boba
Fett,
Fett
episode
sorry.
Inside The Mandalorian.
God. Yeah. Because that was really bad.
Yeah. And that was in Mandalorian Season 2, that's right. And Obi-Wan, I was pretty disappointed by. Like, had promise, had its moments. Ultimately, I think it was a massive, like, just a terrible idea, the way it was executed on. And, like, emblematic of the things that Star Wars keeps doing wrong, which is, like, concentrating on legacy characters all the time and not be able to move on to tell different stories, which is why Rogue One is a film I like but don't love. I think I like the execution.
Pacing is wild.
Yeah, the execution of Rogue One, I think the back half is really good. Mm-hmm. Like, where it gets to is great, but the first half, I feel like that film, I need to go back and rewatch it now that I've watched Andor, because I think I might have a different feeling on it, but like, it kind of feels like they're getting the Suicide Squad together, but they don't do the work of making me care about them
that was,
as a group.
I had huge issues with, like, character, and then obviously just, like, and then we go here, and then we go here. Yeah. And I was like, no, let's, like, sit somewhere for a little bit and get to know people.
Well, there's a sequence in the rain in that film that is, like, where that should be the team coming together and gelling together, and it just doesn't quite get there from memory. It's been 5 years
I've
since
only
I've watched
it once.
So I need to go back and watch it again, but I remember that feeling, but the back half was great. And then the Han Solo ones, whatever. I'm... With Andor, I think the thing was... The trailers impressed me, but I didn't care about this character because I wasn't a particularly big fan of Rogue One. Mm. I was like, why the fuck are we making this? Mm-hmm. Like, why does this exist?
Mm-hmm.
I'm always looking for something new, but it just didn't... It wasn't apparent to me why they would choose Andor to tell a story about him. So with that in mind...
Mm-hmm.
Damask, would you like to give your spoiler-free review of Andor Season 1?
Absolutely. All right, so bear with me. This is a very short spoiler-free review. I had to finish it on Brod's couch the other day. Okay, so This show took me so long to get into. I think it took 3 days in total for me to finish episode 5.
Episode 5?
Yeah, I just couldn't, I don't know. I just like kept wanting to get on my phone and be like, well, I'll do something else now. I watched the first 4 episodes as they came out, but nothing in them really hooked me. Then as the episodes continued to roll out, I saw on Twitter that every film and TV nerd was absolutely losing their mind over the show. It's the best show on TV. Oh, things like that, you know, like this is the type of Star Wars property that wasn't good for Star Wars. It was just good. Tweets like that, you know.
Yep.
But I had my doubts. I was like, okay, guys, calm down. I finally ran out of time, though, as I just said, and had to complete the series for the podcast.
This is why we're ending the show.
That's right. This has become my life. The show does get progressively better. It's a show about spies and secret rebellion, so naturally it needs time to unfold and for all the pieces to finally be stitched together bit by bit. And when it gets there and I feel the progress, I can genuinely say that it is good.
Good.
I watched it and I was like, yeah, no, this is solid.
Yeah.
The stakes are felt more and more, although that can be wearisome from time to time as I struggle to connect with the lead, Cassius, mm-hmm. I think.
Cassian,
I'm sorry.
Cassian.
That's how much I was paying attention.
I don't say his name all that often. And I think you asked me at one point, like, is Andor the name of a planet or
something? I did ask that.
I was like, no, that's his surname.
I was like, okay. To be fair, it had been like weeks and weeks and weeks since I'd turned on the show. And before every episode, I just had to watch the recap because I'm like, I don't remember.
Yeah, I think I did that every episode too. Yeah. It's always just good to know what's important to remember.
Yes.
Because they're dense at times. Yeah.
Absolutely. So there's just like a lot of surly looks and suspicious faces and intrigue and ducking around corners. And there's just a lot of that. And I found myself feeling fatigued by it, a little bored. Mm-hmm. The temptation, like I said, to pick up my phone was pretty strong. So that was a real shame. But by the end of the show, I was satisfied. Mm. I could see why people really loved it, mm-hmm. And why it was a breath of fresh in terms of what we've seen for Star Wars, mm-hmm. which is nice to see that, yes, you can delve away from, like you said, those legacy characters, get to know others, not be on Tatooine. My God.
Yeah.
That was fabulous. The planets we saw, really enjoyed. There was one in mm-hmm. particular that I was like, oh, I want to spend a lot of time here. Even if it's like a below deck type reality show or Vanderpump Rules reality show, which is where people work in hospo
okay.
and look after like the rich and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In
yeah,
a Star
yeah.
Wars okay, world. No, like I was like, oh my gosh, like this is something different and cool and fun. Lots of cute little aliens, ugly aliens.
And robots.
Droids. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there were plenty of elements for me to be like, okay, this is really cool. I like that they're cracking open the world or the universe. And I will be watching season 2. But I didn't fall in love with the show.
Totally.
Yeah, it was solid. Yeah.
That comment you saw online of like, this is not just great Star Wars. This is like great television. Mm. And like, or to go the next step in hyperbole, the best show on television at the moment. Mm-hmm. How do you react to that sort of critique?
I understand the excitement around feeling satisfied by a Star Wars mm-hmm. story mm-hmm. And the relief one would feel from that, having had to wait for so long and be disappointed so often. Do I think it's the best show on television at the moment? No, mm-hmm. I don't. It's good. It's really good. Mm-hmm. It's in the upper echelons for things that are coming out right now, this very second. Yeah. But no, it's not the best TV show on. It is a good show despite being a Star Wars property.
I think if I had to try and take that hype and hyperbole and try and distill it down to something that made a little bit more sense, it's like this felt like a show, even though it's Star Wars, that could have been at home on HBO, mm-hmm. right? Where so much quality television comes from. Like they have, we just had The White Lotus, which we're going to review next week. Anyway, I'll tell you that later. with The White Lotus, right? And that's a show that out of nowhere showed up, great quality, got a second season, great quality again. Mm-hmm. Whether it's Succession or Euphoria, whatever, mm-hmm. they just have hit after hit of like quality drama.
Mm.
And this felt like it could have been a HBO show. And if that's
it could have been about any rebellion, you know what I mean? Which was
that's part of what I think makes it. When people talk about being not just great Star Wars, great television, it's like it doesn't really matter that it is Star Wars. It's better for Star Wars that it is.
Yes,
but it's not necessarily the show could exist without the Star Wars trappings for that to and still be good. And I think that's the compliment or that's the angle I want to take on it. So my general thoughts are: who could have predicted this show would be this good? I certainly had no idea. I always hoped the shows would be this good, but I couldn't predict it. And this sort of, to me, exemplifies, I think the other reason to be excited, exemplifies what I want more of out of Disney Plus in general. Whether it's Star Wars or whether it's Marvel, start to look to do things a little bit differently. Look at your properties and go, well, yes, we need to set this in the Star Wars universe, but how can we make it feel unique
and be unique take
and stand on its own two feet and not have to constantly be in dialogue with Star Wars that we've known all the time. I mean, this definitely has a place in the canon. It definitely is still informing other parts of the story, but it doesn't need a Skywalker in it. It doesn't even need to talk about the Force. There's not a lightsaber in sight. Like, there's so much that just doesn't need to be addressed in that regard. And like we talked about with our She-Hulk review, what if She-Hulk had not been so concerned with being a part of the existing MCU, but more like going, okay, let's take a different angle and look at the MCU. What if this was a proper legal drama / comedy that was looking at the reality of living in a superhero world? Yeah. And this is sort of that from a, like, building a rebellion, building towards war sort of perspective.
Yeah. If we're going for, like, you know, making TV shows that exist in the same universe, I think if they're built around the idea of, like, it just happens to be, blah, 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 belonging here, and here. But by itself, it's got its own thing to say and its own thing to do. Therefore, just by association, is enriching and not being so worried about tying this piece with that piece or, like, stating this is what this kind of show is in terms of, like, this is for the ladies or this is for the kids or whatever it is. It's just like, well, no, just if you've got a story to tell and it's a genuinely good story and it happens to fit into the MCU or Star Wars or whatever, people will get their eyes to it and enjoy it.
I think that is the other thing too. It's like this has a genuine perspective. It has a genuine story it wants to tell that has been underappreciated within Star Wars. So much of Star Wars, like, it's in the title, Star Wars, right? It's about a fascist empire and the rebellions, gritty underdogs who are trying to take them down. It makes for exciting story, makes for epic movies, but, like, does a bad job of really addressing, like, the political nature of that. Like, the war part of Star Wars gets forgotten behind, like, battleships firing lasers at ships.
Well, I think the prequels attempt to do it from a side of, like, you know, politics and politicians, like, playing that in a terrible way, not done well, but that's kind of what's trying to happen there. But I think for me, who, while I grew up considering myself a Star Wars fan, now because of how much there is, I consider myself a very casual Star Wars fan. I never really grasped the magnitude of the struggle of people living under, like, a fascist regime under such an empire. And this has a real focus on what the, like, day-to-day looks like, the price of sacrifice, the price of fighting on a personal level and not from, like, a chosen one level or, like, I absolutely know that I am, like, the hero of this story and I need to do these things. It's like, well, I don't feel like a hero, but I have no choice. I have limited choices now. The world is closing in on me, et cetera, et cetera. It's weighted in real human emotion and connection, and that's important.
Yeah, the way, if there's one thing this series does great, one of many things really, but making me understand what the Empire is and what it does to people. Mm-hmm. Because, yes, we have stormtroopers walking around in the films.
Yeah, but what does that mean? Like,
And yes, they're blowing up planets, obviously big bad, but that still doesn't tell me what their day-to-day government is like. The governance of the people, why people would be standing up to start a rebellion. Mm-hmm. Or, like, if you look at Tatooine in Episode 1 versus Episode 4 where Luke's in, what's the difference? You don't really see a difference except there are stormtroopers walking around. But we don't know what that impact is on the day-to-day lives of the citizens and why. And so this goes such a long way to help you to understand why people are like fed up with the Empire.
The day-to-day oppression of it, yeah.
And their methodology. Like, mm-hmm. we get to spend lots of time understanding the Empire's system yeah. and how it functions and the people who make it function.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really, really, really great to see it. It's like, it's so refreshing. The question I have is this the best Star Wars has ever been? Because that's what people want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say it's not the most entertaining. It's not the most fun or exciting. But on some levels, it possibly is the best it's been. Like, it's the most relevant to our, as an allegory, which Star Wars in many ways is meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than just a hero's journey now. It's like a talking about oppression and rebellion and like standing up and sacrifice and all those sorts of things. And that's, I find, very exciting and really hits me on a different level than Star Wars ever has.
Mm-hmm.
I think that should be celebrated a big way. It definitely took a while to get going. Everyone was telling me just keep, like, they released 3 episodes to begin with, and mm-hmm. there's a reason
mm-hmm.
because the first 2 episodes are very slow burn. The 3rd episode does pick up a little bit, but now, but after that, it takes a little while to like find that the momentum again. But boy, it does pay off. I think that slow burn is kind of very deliberate.
Yeah.
And it paid off by the end for sure. I think everything about Star Wars, especially the original trilogy, is elevated by this show. As we said, knowing who the Empire is, knowing who the Rebels are and how they came to be is astonishingly good and really, really relevant. And like, by merely existing, knowing it's a great show, it elevates the entire franchise. I think the thing that impressed me the most is while it's not always the most exciting or riveting, there's a tension inside the show that is visceral. Like, you can feel this show at so many times. When it is being slow, it's because we're trying to understand the human elements that get to the point where you do something drastic, like start to fight back against an empire. Like, you need to feel that, and you need to feel the fear and the oppression and the sadness and all those things that get you to that point, mm-hmm. and the things that you're giving up, the parts of your humanity you might be giving up to be a part of that as well. I can't say any more without going to spoilers. I'm looking forward to talking about that. But like, there's just so many times where just like, where the show is at its best, you can feel the tension rising and you're just waiting for that dam to break. It was exhilarating at times because of the work they did to get you to that point. I'm excited and honestly emotional that Star Wars is choosing to do stuff like this now. And like I said, I just hope Disney can look at this and go, people really responded well to this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take bigger risks with the sort of stories we tell. Let's try and do some more adult stuff. Let's not have to have this make action figures and like sell posters anymore and t-shirts. Let's create stories that adults who have been around with this series for 40 years, 50 years, wherever it's going to be pretty soon, can interact with an adult level. And mostly I'm just worried this is going to ruin The Mandalorian for me, because The Mandalorian is a rollicking adventure series,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know if that's what I want out of Star Wars as much anymore. Like, I think I want more of this. I'm looking forward to The Mandalorian, don't get me wrong.
I mean, I love an adventure, so I'm always going to be...
Totally.
Jump back in. Yeah.
But I worry that my problems with The Mandalorian are going to... Either it's going to course correct or it's going to continue down the path I don't like with The Mandalorian. And Andor, I feel like, is like showing me this is the way, not that is the way. score for this one, Damask, how would you score it out of 5 stars?
I think for my like overall enjoyment, I've got to give it a 3.5. But for the actual show itself, I'm giving it a 4.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a pretty high 4.
Mm-hmm.
I think it... It's funny to say like 3 is decent, right? Like, it's better than decent. It's just it's just like engagement wise wasn't always excellent,
mm-hmm.
but the quality of the show is excellent. The quality of the writing is excellent. The quality of the performance is excellent, and at times masterful to the point where it can be compared to a HBO show.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to reward it with that. I almost want to give it a 4.5, but I think a 4 is sort of where I'll come down on it.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites.
So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Before we dive into spoilers, we'd like to ask everyone who enjoys the show to please review us on Apple Podcasts and or Spotify. Come on, guys. We've given you 6 years of our life. Nothing helps the show to grow more than by throwing 5 stars and maybe a couple of nice words our way. We'd also love you to share Hunting Seasons with friends and family who you think might also enjoy listening. Now, remember, while we've only got a couple of episodes left, this show will be up for people to enjoy for years to come, all right? And I was about to say, these shows aren't going anywhere, but HBO Max is deciding to remove all of its shows pretty much from the streaming service.
You
so who knows?
Watch Westworld on HBO Max anymore. Like, it's gone.
It's wild.
Oh, my goodness.
So just share it if you have enjoyed us over the years. We'd really appreciate it.
Next episode, we'll be back with our review of The White Lotus Season 2. If you'd like to contribute to our discussion of The White Lotus, if you have any thoughts on Andor, you can write to us or send us an audio recording that we may include on a future episode to contact at huntingseasonspodcast.com or find us on Twitter at huntingscast. But right now, let's talk spoilers for Andor Season 1.
Deep dive.
It's cool to know other people think about this stuff too.
I was trying to figure out how we should break up the deep dive, and we can either do it by character, I feel like, or we can do it by, like, there's sort of like sections.
Yeah.
There's like the start on Ferrix, I think it is, at the start. Then I've got this written down somewhere, the names of different planets. Then there's stuff on Adani, and then there's stuff on what was that prison planet called? Narkeena 5, and then we go back to Ferrix again. How would you like to do it? What do you think is the best way to do it?
Maybe in sections?
I think sections might be the way. So, especially because it feels like there's momentum and movement through those different sections. So, the first sort of 3 episodes, which is probably the bit we both, and I think everyone, struggled with the most with this show, was those first 3 episodes set on, I think it's Ferrix, if I said that right, which is like where Cassius is living now with his mother, and we actually meet him the very first scene on a different planet, and he has like an interaction with a couple of cops and actually kills one and has to kill the other one to sort of get away. And then he's being chased down by not the Empire, but like this corporate security group that is sort of working underneath the Empire. But by the time they've fucked this up completely, the Empire take over. What do you make of this sort of first? Oh, we also have the flashbacks to like, we're seeing like the story of young Cassian and whatever home planet he came from originally, and then him and his sister, and I think it's an Empire ship comes down, they go to investigate, some shit goes down, he gets sort of saved and adopted by his mother, Martha? I've forgotten her name already. Marva, that's right, Marva. What did you make of this sort of first 3 episodes?
I feel like I made it pretty clear. So it was very slow. I struggled. It was weird. It was like a lot going on, but also not a lot going on.
Sure.
So yeah, we're like bouncing between like flashbacks of childhood, trauma, and, obviously who he is now, which is a bit of a rogue investigating what happened to his sister, trying to find her. I was like, okay, all right. Waiting for this to get a little bit more interesting, figure out exactly what's going on here. I don't know. I just didn't know where to place myself in it.
Yeah.
Or how to feel about it. He's, a very closed off character, understandably. I mean, we have the context for that, of course. But, I didn't know. I didn't care, I suppose, at that point.
Yeah, it's trying to do a lot in terms of like setting up a status quo.
Yeah.
We've got to then care about Cassian pretty quickly because we need to care. he's killed these cops and that the Corpo security group, whatever, is after him. Ferrix is also not at this point necessarily a particularly interesting place, I don't think. It's kind of, it's not Tatooine, which is good. And it is unique in that, like, it's all about this very, like, workers.
It's like a mining town.
Yeah, kind of. Like, it's, they're, like, making bricks. Everything's made of brick. It's different to what we expect from Star Wars normally, which is good. So, yeah, very, like, blue-collar sort of planet, I guess. But, yeah, it's such a... And then the stuff, the backstory stuff is kind of opaque as well. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I guess I figured out it was Cassian pretty early.
Yeah.
But it's not until he meets Marva on board the ship that you really start to put together what the importance of this was. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of, like, waiting for the shoe to drop on this stuff. It does take a while. There were elements of it, though, I liked. Like, I appreciated, like, seeing them, like, hang their gloves up at the end of the... Like, the details of the world were interesting. Hanging their gloves up at the end of the day when they'd come back from the mines or whatever they were doing. Or I think they're pulling apart, like, scrap from the ships from the war and stuff. And then, like, the guy that's banging on the anvil to do, like, the start of the workday and the end of the workday and stuff like that. Things like that.
Yeah, the world building is great.
World building was great in that. I loved B2 Emo, the little... droid that Marva has.
Almost like too cute and not in the way of like those little, like, what are they called? Pogs or whatever that I've...
Porgs
that I'm like, okay, all right. You just want to sell some plushies. But too cute in the way that I'm like, I can't deal with this robot like not being loved as much as it should be.
Yeah.
You know, like I was like, it's just too emotionally, like it was like heart wrenching. I'm like, oh no, someone give the poor thing a hug.
I think the thing was, I do think he was, he's the most loved droid I could ever remember in Star Wars.
Yes.
So often droids are just sort of like, at best, like a thank you buddy to R2, but so often they're treated like shit. Mm-hmm. Like they're just, like no one takes C-3PO seriously ever.
I just want to like Cassian to stop leaving. You know what I mean?
Sure,
I was
totally.
Just like, stop it.
Yeah. But that's because it's like he had that puppy dog nature of every time you came home, he was super excited you're back. I missed you because you were gone.
Oh, breaks my heart.
Which was heartbreaking in the end when Marva died. It was just like, oh no. But everyone's trying to look after B2. I love that. I thought that was lovely.
And I like that he's got his like, it's obviously a recharging station, but his little dog bed and stuff.
Exactly.
I'm like, this is adorable.
It is. It was a great... They can still do droids right on Star Wars. That's fun. But alongside that, we did have a couple of other characters. We had Cyril, for instance, who is like the Corpo guy. He's like the guy who decides they need to get this guy. These two murders took place. Mm-hmm. His guy in charge of him is like, don't worry about it. It was an accident. They just came across the wrong guy. It was an accident. They came across the wrong guy. It's not worth our time. He's like, fuck that. Rules are rules. Justice must be served. Yeah. I'm going to go out of my way to bring in a platoon to bring this Cassian.
He's got a real rules are rules haircut as well. You can really tell this guy loves a rule.
I love the detail that he like has his suits tailored to make them fit him better. Like it's not regulation or anything. It's like it's not what's expected, but he's gone that extra level to be super official.
Yeah.
And then like, yeah, somehow gets the backing of a couple of like... trigger happy security guys to go in and get him, and disaster happens because of it, which ultimately gets the Empire to take over in Ferrix. I enjoyed his character at that stage more because his motivation, and like you could see either this is the beginning of a villain or the beginning of like a turn. Well, it could also be like watching someone like make a huge mistake, like way out of their depth. They think they know what they're doing. They think they're doing the right thing, but they just completely fuck it up, which is what happens ultimately. And we also get to meet Luthen, Skellen Skarsgård's character, who is sort of like, what's his empire name? Axis? He's like the man in the shadows who's sort of building the rebellion piece by piece, slowly over the galaxy. He's a fantastic performance and just a very intriguing...
one of my favorite characters.
Yeah.
Luthen and... What's her name? Mon Mothma. Yeah, love her.
Yes. And I don't really get introduced to Mon Mothma, I don't think, until episode 4. Like, they do a deliberate thing of, like, introducing characters at these certain junction points. Yeah. But Luthen gets introduced early on. He's decided that Cassian is of interest and he's useful and is going out of his way to try
I still don't quite understand why. Am I meant to at this stage?
I think he did tell pretty early on. He explains to him why he wanted him. I think he just saw an opportunity for a man who was desperate on the run and had skill sets, I think, is what he understood about
it. I think I'm always like waiting for, with Star Wars in particular, like the chosen one narrative. No. Yeah, cool.
It's not that.
I'm glad I didn't miss that. It was just,
And in fact, the story of the season is that Luthen did not actually intend for him to be a long-standing part of the rebellion. Yeah. There's the second half of the season is Luthen's like, we have to kill Cassian because he knows I was messy with him. I wasn't as clean as I should have been.
Yep.
And he's a loose end that needs to be tied up. And the very, very end is him going, okay, you're a true believer now. Actually, you're going to be part of the rebellion long-term. And that's part of Luthen's arc. So like, yeah, it was never a chosen one thing. It was like, you're useful but you're disposable as well. But that beyond that, it's hard to take much more away from that first. So he gets the ball rolling. By the end of that first three episodes, Cassian's on board with Luthen and he's dropping him off at Aldani and saying, you need to go. This is your job. I'll pay you for it. He needs the money. He wants to escape Ferrix because he's a man on the run. He wants to take Marva with him. I left there. At the end of episode 3, I was kind of like, that was better. Like, the action sequence and stuff were more exciting. The build-up, watching it, Cyril's sort of plan sort of all go to shit. But I still wasn't loving the show.
No.
At that point.
Not at all.
Second set of episodes is the stuff where we go to Aldani, I believe is the place. Yes. Which is, there's a heist, a plan from a group of rebels hiding out in the mountains to steal the quarterly payroll of an empire, sector of the empire, basically.
I gotta say, how many, was it two episodes we actually spent on that planet?
Three.
And then we, three.
I think it's three, because he gets, so dropped off there at the start of episode 4, he meets Mon Mothma's cousin, whose name I can't remember off the top of my head. It starts with K, I think.
Yeah.
There's a lot of names. I don't remember all of them, to be honest.
I don't remember any of them, so that's great. Yeah.
And then they sort of walk their way to the camp. I think at the end of that fourth episode, they're at the camp. Basically, he's meeting them, and they've got to decide whether they're going to trust him enough to be a part of the mission.
I think it was at this stage where I'm like, oh, God, there's going to be... My experience of this season is going to be waiting.
Yeah.
Is what I felt at that stage. And getting to know this new set of characters who I ultimately didn't really care about even at the end of the season. Watching the preparations for the heist, the distrust in one another, all of those kind of beats that you've probably seen before in like a heist film, particularly when like a new guy's come in.
Kind of. It doesn't have that energy to it though. It's not like a heist film energy. This is the plan. It's basically a suicide mission. We've been working on this for 6 months. At any stage, it could fall apart. It's extremely risky. And there's no guarantee it's going to work. And it was more a build-up of like... It's like when they're walking and the guy decides to... one of the guys on the mission attacks Andor. He has suspicion about him. He finds he's got that crystal that Luthen gave him, which is like his... what's the word? But like he gave it to him and said, keep this. It's my down payment essentially on what you have to do. And Cassian talks about, it's like, don't use me as the excuse if you don't want to do this. The day before is always hard. It's that like, it's a discussion of the preparation, the courage it takes to do something this drastic. And that's ultimately like rewatching those little bits with you when you were watching again. In hindsight, are so much stronger because you know where it ends up and like what happens and who dies and like the danger was real and half of those people are dead. I think only three of them survived of the six or whatever survived by the end of that.
Yeah.
And watching like one of the things Cassian talks about is how easy it is. It's like in some ways all you got to do is rock up and pretend you're part of it and they don't think for a second that we're capable of just doing it. They're so fat and satisfied, I think he says. They wouldn't even dream that you would try something this brazen. And watching them do exactly that for the most part. Like,
I just think, like, sure, like, in hindsight or whatever, great, awesome. In, the present, watching it for the first time, I'm like, sure. So they're going to steal some money?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Like, I just was not invested at all in this heist. I think as we go along and you see... One, the level of control the Empire has. And while it might seem small, sometimes it's only like, you know, the death by 1,000 cuts or whatever. Sure. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of like the strategy and that comes clearer and clearer as the season goes on. And you see that while it's going to be lots of small things, just being able to do it is important. Having the strength to do it is important. But at the time, I'm like, so they're stealing money.
Yeah.
Okay.
But see, that's, again, something I like. It's like, it's not where blowing up a Death Star. You know what I mean? It's not, that's not where the Empire, that's not where the Rebellion's at yet. In fact, Miro calls this, it wasn't a small thing. She calls this an announcement. This is a big deal. Like, you are daring to steal directly from the Empire. This was not a something. This was not stealing a little navigation device that will go missing and, you know, people will just, like, you know, do the paperwork and pretend it's not there. This is, and people will know about this. It makes the news. The Rebellion is a thing that is happening now. We are going to do the Robin Hood situation, essentially. Which, like, it was a big deal.
Which I understand. I'm just saying, like, the emotional stakes weren't there at that time.
Not from the Rebellion point of view. And yeah, by the end of the season, when you, like, when you get to the Rick's Road stuff and you care about those people more and you care about them uprising and, like, fighting the power directly, you feel it more. But I still, it is interesting because, like, yes, I didn't necessarily care about those six people going on that mission, but I did invest in obviously how dire it was. And, like, that these people were true believers. Like, one of them's writing a manifesto that has been handed down to Cassie and is going to inform sort of his state of mind going forward. And they are true believers who are willing to put their lives on the line to do something that, you know, if they don't make it past the first checkpoint, no one's going to know they did anything.
I think the episode where we are actually doing the heist and we see that, like, the inside guy.
Yes.
Like, that sequence, that episode, I was very much enjoying.
So good.
Like, cause I think also having that man on the inside made me go, they've, like, so much work has been done here. You know what I mean? It's not just, like, flying in, pew, 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 flying out. Like, there has been, like, months, years of preparation, so much, like, sacrifice, all that stuff. Like, it really came to, it did ultimately come together for me in those moments. I'm just saying, like, you know, that one or two episodes where they're just, like, in the valley or whatever, I was just like, I'm bored.
Yeah, it's, I get that. It is a show, so much of the show is a show of discussion that leads to eventually to action, right? And I thought those three episodes in Aldani were more successful than the episodes on Ferrix to begin with.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
But even, like, you're talking about the amount of preparation. Like, I love the discussion when Andor, like, they're walking, it's like, you're going to fly this thing. It's like, okay, well, they're talking about, he starts asking questions like, do you know how to do this? They ask him, like, what's this? Like, how do we do this thing? It's like, there's a lever right there. You guys don't know that? Holy fuck. I'm going to fly. I know. It's just that, like, watching, it's almost a procedural in, like, how to form a rebellion. It's like watching the scrappy underdogs and what it actually takes to become the rebels that we know. They don't just suddenly have X-Wings and shit like that. Like, it's, is so much work and sacrifice, and I don't know. It works even better the longer you get into it. And I think that's part of the problem is, like, you have to invest in the tone and the approach that the show is taking. But once you're in it, and I think by, like, those sequence episodes particularly, I started to understand what the show was. Then alongside all that, if we're going to move on for that for a second, though, the heist was amazing. The eye stuff, like the asteroid stuff was beautiful. The actual way that all went down, I thought was wonderful. We do have now get to know Luthen, who is undercover as, like, an art seller on Coruscant.
Hilarious. Yeah.
And him talking with
the wig work that he does
Work every day. The way he, like, puts on the mask, essentially, the face he puts on. And then the ways, the codes and the sort of way they discuss. Like, there's a bit where later in the season when he's talking to his assistant, whose name I don't remember, and they're, like, over comms, they know that could be being tracked. So they're talking in terms of, like,
negotiations to get the peace, and there are other buyers and all that stuff.
I'm loving all that. The discussion with Mon Mothma when she comes in, she's going to buy a present for her husband, but they're having discussions about, like, moving the money and stuff like that. And all of that spy work is very exciting and fun.
I really enjoyed pretty much every single one of those scenes.
Yes.
what planet? Is that Coruscant?
That's Coruscant,
Which
is great to see too, because Coruscant was always like, if I think about the prequels, it's like that's where the Jedi are, that's where the Senate is, and there's that one sequence in Attack of the Clones, where they sort of go to the nightclub district and the bounty hunters. But it's like Coruscant is a place, didn't feel very real. Mm-hmm. It was just like a big city planet. And then, like, even spending time with, like, with Cyril, who's living with his mum there, and, like, the brutalist architecture that would make up this metropolis planet felt like, oh, I get the feeling of living on Coruscant for the first time ever. Like, I don't know. I really enjoyed that stuff. Go on, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I loved pretty much every scene on Coruscant. I love Mon Mothma. Nailed it. One, I'm just very attracted to her as a leader, as a senator, as a wife who hates her husband, and also the kind of the game she has to play. I was like, oh, this is like, this is what the prequels couldn't do.
Yes.
Like, they just did not have the ability to do it at all. Realizing that she's in such a precarious situation, trying to figure out a way out of it, hoping that she can trust the person that she wants to trust, her, like, childhood friend or whatever.
Peter Townsend from The Crown Season 1 too, yes.
Yes, that's right. when she was, like, kind of hinting at him, and they're talking around, like, although quite, like, openly, really, when you consider the stakes about their political leanings.
Yes.
I was like, don't do it. Then I was like, but then again, if I was in trouble and I needed to talk to someone, I probably would just call Brad. I'm like, well, I feel like we've got, like, enough of a relationship that you're not going to entirely fuck me over, but who knows?
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, fair enough. With that context that they know each other from another life and know each other in a different way than purely politics and power.
Well, he's the one who offers up the vulnerability first. Like, but this, this is a great scene. I agree. Like, in terms of the writing and watching.
When he said that, I was like, oh, thank God.
Again, you're watching, the action is not taking place, pew, 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 lightsaber, vroom, vroom, vroom.
Yeah.
It's like, she has a job.
Mm-hmm.
She's trying to court this guy, hoping that she can trust him.
Yeah.
He is the first one to offer up that he is actually anti-Empire.
Well, he goes, please don't tell me.
Yeah.
Please don't tell me, you because might find I my have politics changed quite
are too strong for your taste.
Yes.
At which point you see her go, holy shit, we're actually on the same page here.
Yeah.
And then as they walk through the party and they're continuing to try and put on the mask, but in plain sight start to, like, build a funding network for the rebellion. Mm-hmm. It's like, it was so good.
And so, like, from time to time, she's just like, smile, and he quickly just does a smile.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yeah, that was a wonderful scene.
Love that scene.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, that I think there are lots of scenes that work on a level like that.
Mm-hmm.
There are some great speeches in this season as well. Like, there's that one where Luthen is talking with, like, he's got his man on the inside of the IBS.
That's my favorite moment. Yeah.
And he asks, what are you sacrificing? And that whole discussion about, like, the humanity he has to completely discard, the what it takes to do what he
what
is
I
doing.
What I loved in that scene and that speech in particular was when the man on the inside says it, and I was very much like, yeah, like, what are you sacrificing? Yeah. Like, this fucking, like, puppet master, whatever.
Totally.
And he absolutely schooled me. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, like, I was like, that's a really valid point. Because you always, you know, those characters exist within other stories. Of course they do.
Yeah.
You know, these figureheads of rebellions and the man in charge who just, like, is so cold and dead. And one assumes that, like, they got to that position because that is who they innately are.
Mm-hmm.
And then to have him very seriously say, like, well, it's not who I am. I have absolutely killed myself from the inside out in order to do what I have to do for others, to, like, what is it, see, so a sun will rise that I'll never get to see, or whatever it is, and just being like, oh, whoa, yeah, okay, valid, fair enough, I'm on your side.
That there are moments like that. There's the speech that Andy Serkis's character gives over the intercom when they're trying to get everybody out, they cause the rebellion inside the prison in the third sort of.
I gotta say that it did make me laugh a little bit, because Cass was like, you know, you have to do it, you're the only one who can do it. But then pretty much the entire speech he's just quoting
Cass.
That's
the point, right? It's like he knows that Andy Serkis's character. We're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit here, but he knows Andy Serkis's character is like, he already commands respect. He's been doing that job. He's in charge. He gets them working. He has that authority. But he's way out of his depth when it comes to this side of things. However, Cassian knows it has to be him. It can't be Cassian himself. That being
but
said...
But my question was, do the people on the other levels know who he
is? Well, a lot of them do because there's going to... Well, first of all, he just understands how to talk to the prisoners. Like, there is a methodology there. Mm-hmm. But also, at least some of them, because they're like the day shift and the night shift are passing each other. Like, there's some association and stuff there for sure. He may be moved through different levels at different times as well and already have some respect to the other groups. That's the truth of it, is that Cassian is a leader. Mm. He can be that guy.
Yeah.
He just couldn't be in that moment. Right. But it was like, it was a proving point for both of them, which is why I liked about it as well. It's like when he uses Cassian's words himself, yes, Cassian can be a leader. He's not a true believer at that point. He's literally just trying to get the fuck out of there at that point. This whole season is him becoming the guy that will eventually be a true leader. See, as we talk about those moments and those, like, the build-up, the payoff is so strong so often in this show. Mm-hmm. When it's like, yeah, you might have a slow episode where it's a lot of talking and you wonder how much you care about these characters. But then when you get to when the rubber hits the road, it is so strong that all that work paid off, I think, throughout the season. That's the bit that impresses me. And even if I went back and I think I watched the original three episodes, I'm going to have a much better interpretation of it the second time round. Knowing where we end up, basically. Mm-hmm. Also, just going back to Luther for a second, I loved his escape sequence at the end of episode 11. Like,
is that with in the
with
ship?
With the tractor beam.
Oh my God. I was like, this guy is like Iron Man. It's like, all his gadgets and stuff. I was like, all right, cool.
That was rad. Mm. Like, the shooting the thing and then the lightsabers that came out of the side. Yeah. And like, that was cool. It was a close thing to a lightsaber all episode. Anyway. Let's move on to the third sequence there, which is when, I love this. There was like a mini bridge episode, like episode 7, where Cassian goes back to Ferrix for a second. Mm. Has that wonderful sequence with Marva where he's like, come with me. And she's like, I can't. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stay here. I can't do much. And maybe it's doomed, but I'm going to fight the Empire because fuck the Empire. Mm-hmm. He's like, I won't have peace because I'll be worried about you. It's like, well, that's just love. Can't do anything about that. Mm-hmm. Heartbreaking. Then he says, I'm going to come back. She says, I know you will. Of course, he never sees her again alive. Mm-hmm. That's very sad. But then he goes to Space Florida and has an interaction with space cops, Florida cops.
I really enjoyed Space Florida.
Yeah.
That was the one where I was like, this is cool and fun and new. Like, obviously, we saw, like, the casino world.
Yeah. Which they did mention Canto Bight, actually.
Yeah.
At one point in this.
But I very much just enjoyed watching, like, ridiculous little aliens sunbaking. I was like, this is wonderful. Thank you so much for this gift. Yeah. But, yeah, then we have the brutal police force who were just like...
Including a K-series droid, which we know he gets the Alan Tudyk K2SO, I think it is, droid later on in Rogue One. So I imagine we'll see how that comes to be in Season 2. But, yeah, then gets brutalized by the cops, gets... unfair trial and goes to prison for 6 years.
Yeah, insane.
I'm just a tourist. Yeah. Love that.
Yeah.
And then ends up on a fucking dystopian prison planet. Mm. Holy shit, that was
there
grim.
There is one thing I want to say. Yes. I did find it. So we get to Florida, Space Florida. and then I got to say, he is walking around so suspiciously, which the cop says, like, why are you looking around so much? And to which I said, yeah, why are you looking around so much?
Like, he's a tourist. What's he going to do?
But he's, like, looking at, like, all the drones and stuff and just looks terrified. And he's clearly just, like, watching out for cops and stuff.
True.
Frustrating to me as a man who's on the run. So then, like, at that point, I was like, okay, I'm kind of, like, jumping back into this show. Enjoyed, like, the heist and stuff, and now we get to that scene where he's like going to prison for 6 years, and at that point I needed another break. I'm like, really, another like full like another comma in this show? And I was annoyed, and so I stopped watching for the day. I was like, I can't be bothered to do this. And then obviously then we jump into the actual prison episodes, and I was like, well, isn't this a nice surprise?
Yeah.
It was obviously a stressful, terrible time, but a great time in the show.
The realization of like that scenario, the floor that will electrocute you, the rules on like they're constructing something we don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Did you watch the did you see the after credit sequence?
So I assume that's what they were building from the beginning though. But yeah, it's like more
I love
just
the
like
irony of that though.
World building, another place we are that's actually like oh, I'm really enjoying figuring out how this all works.
The function of it. Yes. It's like solid. It's not fantastical. You're not left going, how does that work though? Sort of scratching your head, which sometimes they'll hand wave things. It's like, this system, this is how it works. This is how they have control. Mm-hmm. This is what control looks like. The sheer just, dystopian nature of that entire thing, very 1984 type stuff, was like so engrossing. And then I think where people really started to like hype up this show, I remember seeing Never More Than 12 was the sentence I kept saying, like Annie Serkis's line at the end of episode 8, I think it is, 9, where he, the whole time he's like, I've got 200 fucking days left. I'm not going to be, you know, fighting back, whatever. And then watching the doctor tell them, it's like, a whole floor got wiped out and it's going to happen to all of us.
They just like recycle us to different places. Like no one's going anywhere.
Yeah. And then Andor, how many guards are there? Never More Than 12, end of episode. Yeah. Like goosebumps.
Yeah, it was good.
Spine tingling really good. Andy Serkis is just always a delight and was so well used in this.
I mean, it is a great section of the story.
Oh.
I mean, just the, like we were talking about, the construction of it to like give you like the bare minimum of what you need, like all the food you could want to eat, though it doesn't have any taste.
You can earn that though. You can earn some flavor one day if you win. You completely grind your bones into dust to make this thing for the Empire.
And just like, you can see how people just sit in and do their time and think they're doing their time. You're like, okay. And we even see Cass like getting to the rhythm of life because it is like so overwhelmingly hopeless in terms of the tiny hope you might have of escaping. It just simply doesn't exist. How could it? Cass going along with things and then, you know, but he is who he is. He wants freedom, little plans here and there. And then, the horror of, obviously we have, you know, the Shawshank Redemption Birdman, who, if you remember that film, there's like the old guy in the prison. We have that kind of character who's always like tragic to see die. And then the realization of, there is no escape. Because why would there be? And the devastation going back into their little kind of pods and just kind of discussing the fact that, we realize what's going on now. We all just let's have a sleep on it and think about what we're going to do next. Amazing. And then, obviously you get that great line from Andy Serkis of Never More Than 12. Which makes you go, well, I'm definitely watching the next episode now. My God. Yeah.
And a fantastic, like, episode in its own right, the prison escape.
I loved it. I loved it so much.
So good. The execution on that plan, things don't go completely right the whole time. No. People are dying.
Bit of a mess. Makes sense.
Way it was going to be. Yep. But ultimately, I think my favorite shots in that is, like, because Andor is right, that they're... If we realize that there's 5,000 of us and like 100 of them or something like that, there is just no comparison. We will overrun them. That bit where they're like running through the halls and all the guards like hold up in like a cupboard somewhere. It's like, that's what's going to happen. They're not going to be fucking heroes.
No.
They don't want, they don't care that much. Yeah. That's a paycheck to them. That's the only reason they're there.
And it would be terrifying.
It would be fucking terrifying. Yeah. It's like, of course, it's exactly what happens. Mm-hmm. The ending of that is very... Oh, that moment where Andy Serkis is like, I can't swim. And then Andor, we don't know what happens to him at the end. Like Andor gets pushed off. We just don't know what happens to Andy Serkis' character. He's kind of wonderful and heartbreaking at the same time. That's some of the best television I've watched all year, honestly. The stuff inside the prison, those three episodes, so good. So well developed and executed upon in the payoff over three episodes. Meanwhile, around this time, we're starting to get to know Miro, this officer inside the IBS, is it?
Oh, yes.
ISB. Not Irritable Bowel Syndrome.
Yeah, I always thought it was IBS. I'm like, that's a bit funny. But yeah, I'm sure it's ISB or whatever. Yeah.
Who I don't think is introduced until episode 4. But she's sort of she's someone who thinks there is this underground. There's something going on. There is more than just random bits and pieces being stolen from the Empire. There is a bigger thing going on. Then when Aldani happens, she's sort of given a lot more control and is, Yeah, going to get Cassian to find this Axis guy.
Obviously, like, they are the quote-unquote bad guys. Yes. But watching her just have some great wins at work, yes, yes. I was like, well argued, well reasoned.
Dead set, though. That is part of what's enjoyable.
Right. Yeah. It was really satisfying, which was weird, which is great writing.
Awful. Yeah. Right, obviously, willing to use torture to get what she needs out of people, and is just like stone cold heartless, like enforcer of the law or of power.
Mm-hmm. But
there is something satisfying
in
watching her do her work.
But before that, you just see her like, you know, in her office job, going to like meeting after meeting. We've all been there, and then just like, you know, being very good at her job, very perceptive, and like. Having
and
to like
underestimated
and totally underestimated, and just to see her kind of like, no, these are the facts. I'm going to do kind of what I have to do, a little under the table stuff. But by the time I get all that information, all that evidence that you want, bam, now I can investigate it, which it was really satisfying.
It's satisfying to see her learn. Like the first time she brings up this thing, she's like talked down by the other guy who's not interested in sharing his sector with her, and then like the head guy who was in he was one of the maesters in Game of Thrones or whatever, and like he was the one that brought back the mountain.
Yeah,
that's right. Anyway, like not enough. Go back and get back in your lane. She learns from that. Okay, I'm going to do this again, but I'm going to have the hard data, and then all of a sudden she's an asset. She's impressive. That was satisfying to watch. Yeah. And she's also very good at just playing, like, it's a really probably straight bad guy, but there's something compelling about her performance, her, like she's a very attractive lady, and just this screwed up scowl she has is really menacing. You believe in her intensity and her power. I also found when they had Bix and they were torturing her with the screams of these fucking alien children when they were massacred. But the nature of the guy explaining the torture method so nonchalantly.
It's still in like beta mode or whatever. They're like, I got some kinks out of it. Yeah. But just insane.
Just the way he like was talking about like he was sharing his video game for the first time or something like that. Like it wasn't torture. It was like, it was chilling. Mm-hmm. He enjoyed it on some level. Oh my God. That all of that was... There's a lot of bits about this show I think are very, 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 very good.
Yeah, I agree.
They escape the prison. It takes a little while, but Andor gets back to Ferrix. Mm-hmm. However, Marva has died in the meantime.
R.I.P.
How do you feel about Marva as a character?
She serves the plot. She serves the plot, played by a wonderful actress.
Yeah, no, sure.
Love, love, love. I mean, I felt really sad at her funeral. But in terms of character, we don't spend a whole lot of time with her, do we?
Not really. There's a few conversations here and there. It's really just between her and Andor. Between her and Cassian, sorry.
Yeah.
I
mean, she is the tether to the life before, you know? And so to lose her is gut-wrenching for the character. And I think because we understand what that means, also gut-wrenching for the audience. Mm-hmm. But as the character, I can't really speak too much on it, really.
Yeah, I think we're more just attached to her, and we like her because of her connection to Cassian. But you said you struggled to get to, like, Cassian's a character you didn't connect with particularly, or you found you struggled with him.
Not overly. I mean, towards the end, I enjoyed him more, particularly after the prison escape.
Yeah.
I really saw his value as a character, and what I'm sure we'll enjoy more from him in the future is that like ability to like rally, help, do what he needs to do, particularly now that he's, you know, his heart is in the thing that he's doing.
Yes.
So that's gonna be good. I felt more for Cassian at the end, but it took a long time because he seemed so detached from the story that he was in.
Yeah, well, he's kind of in denial for so much of it. It's like he's preoccupied at the beginning with searching for his sister, which seems to be a complete fantasy. I do wonder whether it's going to come back. I kind of hope it doesn't. I hope Marva's right. It's like, it's not a thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe channel that into your hatred for the Empire rather than trying to find her. Yeah. It's sort of, I think, is the takeaway here. It's like, do what you can to get back at them rather than try and find her. He just wants to get away. He wants some peace. And then he's got to come to this place where it's like, well, now his mum's died and his sister's gone and he's got nothing else left.
Yeah.
He can't go back to Ferrix ever again. Yeah. What's he going to do? I really enjoyed the build up into that Marva's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Even the explanation on the way of what the importance of Rick's Road is a place that Marva wouldn't cross anymore because her partner had been killed there.
Mm-hmm.
Completely unjustified by the Empire. She's this burning hatred she's been burying for a long time. But the end of her life, she's like, fuck this. I'm not going to let them take Ferrix.
I also love just like
sparks that rebellion there. The
behind the scenes from like the Empire side of like, look, they've asked for this and we've given them this. We've asked for this, but we've given them this. I'm like, yeah.
They did that also on Eldani. They talked about like they want to bring these people up. These people want to come up because mm-hmm. it's a sacred valley so they can watch the eye. And talking about like all the methods they use.
It's the slow choke that What's-His-Face talks about. Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the things they talked about was like they offer them transport. Of course, they're going to take it.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have these refreshment stations along the way. They're going to get so comfortable and drunk there. Most of them won't make it to the top anymore. Yeah. Eventually, they'll just lose interest with the entire thing. They'll stop coming. And like the nefarious nature of just chipping away at like these traditional indigenous people of the land,
mm-hmm.
the colonialization of Eldani,
mm.
and the arrogance that came with that was that character's there for one episode and you hate him.
yeah.
Hate him by the end of the episode. Even the way he treats his family, he's like, fuck awful. This guy.
Yeah.
There's so many details like that throughout that they don't have time to really sink their teeth into all of them. But like as a combined whole, just build up to something really, really wonderful, I think. I don't have a lot more to say, I don't think. Just it is remarkably strong and just so refreshing that Star Wars can really examine its world in this way.
Mm-hmm.
I really, 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 really enjoyed it because of that. Is there anything else you want to talk about, particularly any characters or moments or...
Okay, so what's the, like, the straight-laced, rule-loving weirdo guy called?
Cyril.
I didn't want him to come back. Like, whenever we see him in the scenes with his, like, overbearing mom. I was like, okay. And then he's got, like, this weird, creepy crush on What's-Her-Face. And I was like, okay. And I'm sure, like, moving forward, he's going to be an amazing character. But just as I was getting more invested in the other aspects of the show, I was not interested in anything that he was doing at all.
I think he's a slow burn in the background. Like, he's kind of like the anti-Andor, right? He's going to be... He's a true believer of the Empire, it seems, mm-hmm. of the rules and of control and, like, yeah, watching him. And if it's like we've got Luthen and Andor and we've got Miro and Cyril and it's like there are, like, pairings inside. And
mm-hmm.
I think what's going to be fun about Cyril is to watch this insipid bootlicker
mm-hmm.
sort of come to some sort of fate that is going to be very deserving of him.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, now that he's earned... his place by saving What's-Her-Face. I'm going to continue just to not know anyone's name.
Miro.
Now that he has his place, no doubt that he's going to be more integral to the story and it's going to be interesting to see those two control freaks, oh my gosh, deal with each other on a daily basis. I have no doubt it's going to be an interesting character arc for him. I just like just in this season alone, I was just like, go away.
I'm interested actually where Miro goes from here because this kind of did not go well for her.
Mm.
Like, she had this operation on Ferrix. There was a mass rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't get a man.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, is she going to have to eat crow? Is she going to be demoted after this? I'm not sure. She's not going to come out of this thing and go, yeah, you're going up a rank. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
At best, she stay where she is and she has to prove herself. I'm not sure. The other option is she gets, like, demoted back down to, like, a sergeant or something like that. And they're, like, working together to try and work her way back up in some way.
Oh, God, that'd be hilarious.
Yeah. Like, I'd working watch that outside workplace the comedy. Rules.
Yeah.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm interested to see where that goes.
Any last words?
Final thoughts.
That's why you always leave a note.
Do you have any side notes, Damas?
I don't.
I had a couple of favourite lines. The axe forgets, but the tree remembers. Mm-hmm. Just a great little like analogy for the rebellion versus the empire. Tell him I love him more than anything he could ever do wrong, which didn't even come directly from Mira. Marva. It came through his mate who like got that message from her and then passed on to
Cassian. I loved. If my mum, that was the last thing she said to me, I'd kind of take it as a backhanded compliment.
You'd take it as a backhanded compliment?
Yeah. I'm like, oh, so you're going to assume I'm doing things wrong, mum?
I mean, he's a fuck up. What are you talking about?
I know, but I was just like, well, that seems unnecessarily cruel.
I had two other questions. One is like, not even a question. One's a detail, one's a question. One that's a Star Wars thing as old as time.
Mm-hmm.
What is the point of stormtrooper helmets if you can get headbutted and take a blow? Like, there's a bit in the like the rebellion at the end where they're having the protest, and like someone like with their clean forehead headbutts a stormtrooper helmet. And they're like, oh, it's like, what is the point of your helmet?
Do you think it's kind of like, you know, the executioner hood? So it's like, so they're just like a faceless mask.
They're just plastic. They're like made of like, you know, the mask you get in show bags. Mm-hmm. They're like really thin plastic. Yes. There's just like nothing to them whatsoever. Made of paper mache. There's not a lot of like references or allusions to the original trilogy or anything like that. There's one thing they did, I think twice, or at least once very clearly and once a little bit like it, that's direct like homage to the original trilogy. Twice they close the door on Bix when she's about to be interrogated and or tortured.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of pull out of the room, close the door, and then like follow a guard as they walk past. Which is exactly what happens in A New Hope when Leia's getting tortured with the like the big ball droid thing when mm-hmm. Vader's going to torture her. I was like, that was the only time I was like, that is a reference to an existing Star Wars thing. I thought that was fun as well. It's just like, we can't show you this. We're going to look away. We're going to do it the way you've seen before. Highlight and low light. What was your low light of the season?
My low light?
Yeah.
First three episodes?
Yeah, me too.
I was just bored.
The build-up is too slow on a first watch, at least. Again, mm-hmm. I think on a second watch, you know, with so much more context, I'm going to care more about that stuff. But as an introduction, I wonder how many people they lost by just being very, very, very dry to begin with and not much exciting happening at all. What was your highlight?
It was that speech by blah, blah, Skarsgård.
Skellen Skarsgård, I think, yeah.
Yeah. It got me. I was like, huh. That is not a perspective I have heard from that type of character before. I thought it was really well written, wonderfully performed, great context for that character, and went a long way for me.
Yep. Stellan Skarsgård.
Stellan
Skarsgård.
Cool name.
He's a cool guy.
He's a cool guy.
And it's funny, like, I've seen him a lot of things now, but like, he plays like a bumbling scientist in the Marvel films, and he's playing like this hard as fucking nails.
He was in Pirates of the Caribbean, wasn't he? Like the second one?
Oh, yeah. He was Bootstrap Bill. That's
I think
right.
That's the first time I remember seeing him, like when I was younger.
I'm going to say episode 10, the escape from the prison.
Brilliant, yeah.
In terms of the build-up to it was great, and then the seeing that all take place, just watching that unfold, like edge of my seat, by my house. That's funny because they do make you care just enough about the other people who work around that table. Mm-hmm. Like, definitely Andy Serkis' character, but even the other guys. Like you do have some affection for them because of the way they help each other out or just the situation they're in makes you give a shit. I was beautifully realized episode of television. Predictions, hopes, and concerns.
I mean, I don't have any legitimate concerns at this stage. My hope is that now that I'm coming into season two with an understanding of each character, people have also a better understanding of themselves in terms of like their beliefs or where they stand. We're not going to have that three episode issue, which is really like a huge part of the downfall for this season for me.
So I say again, you don't the three episode issue, because I think the second season will still do like three episode blocks.
Like the first three episodes were fucking boring. Gotcha. They're not going to. They don't need to do that.
Gotcha.
For season two, so that'll be great.
Yeah, we've only got one season to go. There's only ever gonna be 2 seasons. I think 12 episodes, we even know that. I think that's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it knows what it wants to say. It knows how long it's got. And a lot is likely to happen in that season because there are a lot of things and characters to deal with and get to a place where it's apparently meant to basically lead directly into Rogue One by the end of it. So that's pretty exciting. I hope more than anything that Disney can, as I sort of said in my preamble, like, realize that Star Wars can be more than just jetpacks and lasers. It can be different sorts of stories like this.
Mm-hmm.
Why not have a series that's set about retail workers on Coruscant, if you want,
100%.
Or about like there are, we can, like, yes, obviously this is exciting. It's still about like the war and the rebellion and stuff like that. But if it's just a good story with good writing, good performances, it doesn't have to even be that dramatic if you don't want it to be. I just want more. I think I want more of this in general from Disney. I want them to believe that it's okay to really to not take a half step towards a different genre that has to be 1 foot remaining in what we already know.
Mm-hmm.
Be willing to go that extra couple of steps further and like really take some chances. And I think people are going to appreciate, especially I keep getting this feeling that people are really fatigued with Marvel now as well. It's becoming very samey feeling.
Yeah.
Like, you got to have to push the boundaries to keep people interested, I think, be refreshing in that way. So I hope they do that. I'm fascinated to see what they learn, what lessons they learn from this. I hope it was popular enough. But yeah, very much looking forward to season 2. I hope it comes out next year because I am keen.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Hunting Seasons. You can find more of what we do via our website, huntingseasonspodcast.com. Our logo comes from Sean Kirkpatrick, aka at Shawnee Boy Draws. Our theme song and bumpers from Lucas Harlow Birthday Loyalty Club. Find links to their work in our show notes. You can also find myself, Broderick Gordis, on Twitter at bgordis. That's B-G-O-R-D-E-S. Damask.
Can't find me anywhere. If you need to contact me, you can contact Brod or the Hunting Seasons Twitter /email.
Next episode, which will be our second last review episode, episode 199. We'll be back to discuss The White Lotus Season 2. We've already watched all of that. I'm very much looking forward to discussing
me
it.
Too.
In the meantime, thank you again for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Bye.
Good night, everybody.
Absolutely.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.